The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Good afternoon. Welcome in on a Friday afternoon. We have made it through a busy, busy week, and today may be been the busiest day of the week when the report finally came out in Baton Rouge, something that the reporting of Kenny Jacoby, Nancy Armour, and Jessica Luther of USA Today has been portending for some time. That is the trio of reporters that first broke this story last fall and have been following it diligently throughout the winter into early March. In fact, the reporting was pointed out today by the group looking into it. So what's it all about? In a nutshell, the LSU investigation found that the school routinely mishandled allegations of sexual misconduct. In fact, the former athletic director, Joe Oliva, who at one time wanted to fire Les Miles because of the activity on the football field and then backed down and acquiesced because of fan pressure, according to this report, wanted to fire him after these allegations, but did not get a lot of support. We'll get through the majority of the report as best we can, your reaction to it, but we begin with Kenny Jacoby, who returns to the program. And Kenny, thank you very much for the time. And I know many have said it today and will continue to say it, but much praise should be handed into the direction of you and your two other colleagues at USA Today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, let's talk to you about the treetop revelations that came out today. Yeah, many of which you have been reporting. But just as you were able to go through this 148-page report by the law firm Hush Blackwell, what stood out?
Yeah, so this report did confirm a lot of what USA Today has already reported. And, you know, it concluded, and LSU's president said this, that the school's handling of sexual misconduct over the past many years has been a serious institutional failure created by leaders who did not spend enough money, who left offices understaffed, and left students at risk. It also contained new information about Les Miles and his sexual harassment of student workers. And it dove deeper into the allegations against Darius Geis and Drake Davis. But ultimately, you know, as a result of this, LSU did announce a couple of disciplinary actions against two athletic department employees. We're still going through the full report, but in many ways, this has confirmed what USA Today has been reporting for the last several months.
So let's stop right here for a second, Kenny, and try to figure out where this story goes from here and who else is investigating.
Yeah, so it certainly does not stop here. LSU has, like I said, announced two disciplinary actions against athletic department officials, but said it's considering more. The student body at LSU is very engaged on this issue and has a student government committee actually meeting this afternoon. They're going to be discussing this and making recommendations to the school, which they'll consider. And then there's, you know, a number of recommendations made in this report. There are 18 of them, in fact. The school has already said it's going to be adopting most, if not all of them, including creating a new office on campus to investigate these complaints, adding additional staffing, contracting with the local rape crisis center. But there will still be more fallout. There's an active U.S. Department of Education investigation into LSU's for alleged violations of campus safety laws at the federal level. So there's still more to come out of this.
Let me ask you about the federal investigation, because it comes from the Department of Education. Explain that if you could.
Yeah, so there's a the U.S. Department of Education is tasked with enforcing a number of federal laws requiring universities to take measures to protect their students from, you know, violence by other students, from all kinds of potential threats that they could face. This office of the Department of Education said that they'd received a number of very disturbing complaints about LSU in the last few months, and it also cited the news media, several reports that detailed a lot of those troubling incidents that happened. So it's taken all of those things into consideration, and it's demanded a bunch of documents and records from LSU. It says it's going to have a presence on campus for some time and be working with individual employees, conducting interviews, interviewing other students. So this was all brought to their attention, both publicly and through private complaints, and they decided to open an investigation.
What could this potentially mean to the university?
Well, as far as, you know, what sanctions the federal government can impose, they can impose fines. And for violations of Title IX by a university, the U.S. Department of Education actually does not have that many tools at its disposal. It can enter into resolution agreements with the school, you know, to try and improve things going forward, but it's only real sanction that it has is to revoke the school's federal funding entirely, which is something that has not been done in the whole 50-year in the 50 years since Title IX was implemented. So, you know, there could be other effects, such as just damage to the university's reputation. But ultimately, any additional action will have to probably come from public pressure. And recommendations by these students and other interested groups about what they feel should be done in order to make the campus a safe place.
I know you're a reporter, and you know there's a big difference between reporting a complicated story and offering hot takes. But you understand it better than the rest of us. I think all of us, you know, talking or listening to this right now, trying to get a handle on what it means. There is the NCAA part of it, which looks into institutional control, and it just appears that there is a great deal unanswered here. I don't know whether the NCAA widens an investigation that they've already begun. I don't know if any of that. I'm not sure what else is out there, but it seems like this. And I'm not saying this is not significant. But, you know, for the women that whose cries were disregarded, I wonder what enough is.
Yeah, you know, I think what this report demonstrates very well is that these problems at LSU were pervasive and not just limited to, you know, members of the football team or athletic department. There was a neglect for providing the proper and appropriate resources to be able to handle sexual assault and domestic violence complaints appropriately. There was severe understaffing, but when they did even, you know, process complaints, often they would result in basically slaps on the wrist. You know, students who'd been found responsible for rape being allowed to stay on campus under probation. I think the NCAA, you know, they have historically not really been engaged on issues of sexual violence involving their member schools. You mentioned lack of institutional control. I think that could potentially be demonstrated by the way LSU handled Les Miles. You mentioned it before. The athletic director found his conduct so disturbing back in 2013 that he said he thought they could fire him over it with cause. But instead, they essentially swept the thing under the rug, didn't tell the public about it, gave him a private letter of reprimand and made him attend counseling, but then kept him around for another 3 years until he started losing games. So, I mean, if that doesn't tell you who really, you know, has the power and the influence at that university, then it's hard to say what does.
And Kenny, let's go over that part of it, because you know, all that we learned today, I think we would have previously learned in the reporting of your group with USA Today. But what stands out in these allegations against Les Miles?
Yeah, so as we reported yesterday, Les Miles was accused of sexually harassing at least two, if not three or more, student workers who worked in the athletic department. He essentially wanted a role in personally interviewing them and selecting who would be picked. And he, what we learned today is he had a preference toward blonde women with large breasts who were, you know, particularly attractive. He wanted this as a way of sort of selling it to potential recruits, selling the school. As far as the sexual harassment, what we learned is that he, you know, when he hired these young women, he sometimes offered them to help their careers later down the line after they graduated, and then kind of turned that into a more personal relationship with them. You know, asking for their phone numbers and to put the numbers in his phone under an alias, then beginning text message conversations with them, sending Facebook messages, asking them to hang out. And then ultimately one of the women said he kissed her alone when he was driving her in his car. One of the other students that was mentioned in this report today said that she had a very traumatic experience when she was alone in a room with him, and alleged some sort of unwanted touching, and this had such a profound impact on her that she basically up and left. So these are very disturbing things at the time about Les Miles, but again, none of it was made public, and he was allowed to stay in his job. And LSU administrators continued to praise him, and you know, he was the fourth highest paid coach in the country at that point in college football.
Kenny, it's pretty obvious that he was winning at the time. He was a couple years removed from a national championship in 2013, 2 years removed from winning the SEC and playing for the national championship, and in 2012 started the season number one in the country. He was still not at the at the peak, but not far from it. I mean, most of this is self-evident, but you know, do you think the university will ultimately pay some price for their mismanagement of this, other than maybe a fine? I'm not belittling that, but in the parlance of college football, a fine from the Department of Education is hardly stinging.
Yeah, I mean, and that's sort of the thing is, Who really, you know, has control over what happens to LSU? There are limited things that the federal government can do. There are limited things that the NCAA can do. A lot of this really has to come, you know, from a place of, you know, a genuine desire to do better. And, excuse me, some people feel that, you know, LSU is just demonstrated that by only issuing these short suspensions to these couple of employees, that they're not really willing to walk the walk. But, you know, that's not to say that without more pressure, they, you know, could do more. I think the president, the interim president, has indicated, you know, that he's very troubled by all of this. He apologized to the students. He called this a betrayal. And so, you know, whatever else comes of it, though, I think we'll probably have to come from the LSU Board of Supervisors, from the president himself.
By the way, not to interrupt, but the Board of Supervisors, were they or were they not complicit in some of this?
They were. And that's what we learned today and yesterday, is they signed off on Les Miles's, you know, private written reprimand for these allegations against his students. And that's what a lot of the students I've been speaking to today have said too, is, you know, these people have known about these issues for a long time, and nothing has been done about it until now, and until it appeared in a national newspaper.
Kenny, as we wrap up, and I can't thank you enough, Kenny Jacoby from USA Today, where do you think this turns next? Is it the Department of Education? Is it the NCAA? Is it on campus? Where?
Yeah, I wouldn't count on the NCAA. I think the federal government, the U.S. Department of Education, will take a while to do a really thorough investigation, and I'm confident that they'll do that. But I would keep my eyes right now on campus itself, student leaders, faculty, and just, you know, community stakeholders who have an interest in this and are going to be making recommendations to the president. You might even see a protest in the next, you know, week or so. I would keep my eyes there for anything in the immediate future.
Meanwhile, I'm assuming as of 3:17 Eastern time, Les Miles is still employed at Kansas.
As far as I know, yes. We have not heard anything from Kansas today, but we have reached out, and if we do hear something, we'll report it.
Kenny Jacoby, part of sure to be an award-winning team for this investigation. Kenny, thank you. Always enjoy the conversation, as distasteful as it is. Thank you, and come back soon.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet. Kenny Jacoby, that's again, there's a lot more to the story than what we talked about. The reaction from the school has been fairly tepid in response to, other than big words, in terms of real actions, very little. We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We welcome you back on a Friday afternoon. We'll get your reaction to the Les Miles situation at 855-242-7285. We're going to do something a little bit different here on a Friday afternoon. And we're obviously plenty of time for calls or whatever is on your mind. But we have had so many people talk about broadcasting and broadcasters that we've lined up several of the best broadcasters in the SEC today. And kind of just talk to different people. Many of whom that have been at their universities for a long time, just to kind of get to know them better, their perspectives, the position, and its importance. And we may continue this throughout the spring. There are obviously 14 play-by-play broadcasters in the SEC, and we'll talk to 4 or 5 of them today and keep working through this over the next couple of months. But we thought it would be interesting. Other than the Les Miles story, certainly there are a number of things going on, but we always appreciate your calls, and you can begin calling now at 855-242-7285. Todd is up next on our program. Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. How are you today?
I am doing well. Thank you very much.
Good. Thanks for having me on. Quick comment, and then I've got a little story to tell. The comment, it's just really terrible what we're hearing coming out and of the LSU situation. I remember sitting and with my wife in 2012 getting ready to watch the national championship game, and they, of course, were doing interviews with Les Miles, and they had went in his office, and, you know, I just said to her, it's kind of strange that all his furniture is leopard skin. It looks like something you would see in the back room of a strip club. And look, anyone's personal choice of furniture is their business, okay? When you sign up to be in charge of a college program like this with kids involved, maybe it's cool to some of them, but the overall perception of that just wasn't a good look. I said to her, I said, that's weird.
Todd, I'll tell you this. I've gotten to know him pretty well, especially since he left. We've been around a couple of times on sets and broadcasts. And I know this sounds like it's after the fact, but I've always found him to be just a little bit creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, and my comment's a little bit after the fact. We had no idea. Hey, I mean, I was kind of like, well, you know, he's running a great program. They're winning. But that look that day was weird. So anyway, enough of that. I want to share with you, since we're in the basketball season, a little funny story with me and Charles Barkley. In 1990, I was managing a Pizza Hut over in East Lake in Birmingham.
Sure.
And I was running the night shift. We were about to close, and a big, long Mercedes, a black one, pulled up. And I was like, and there's nobody in the restaurant. I'm like, it's just me and another girl working there. It's like, who in the world is this at 9:30 at night? Well, in comes Charles and his friend. And Charles was playing for the Philadelphia 76ers at the time. And I was a little starstruck. And he walks up, and he says, I got a particular pizza that I want. Could you make it for me? I was like, well, of course. We're Pizza Hut. And I said, step on back to the kitchen. And he came on back, and he wanted a large thin crust with hamburger, cheese, hamburger, cheese, hamburger, cheese. So anyway, it was kind of original pizza,
that is
and
funny.
I got his autograph.
I'll tell you a
great
quick story.
I
was covering Auburn, an Auburn basketball game in 1982, I believe, in Houston. It was a big game. They were playing the Flash Slamajama group. And my room was like three down from Barkley at the hotel after the game. And about midnight, the guy knocked on the door. I think it was Domino's. And they were delivering Charles a pizza. And I'm like going, I think you got the wrong room, buddy. But that was my introduction to Charles in his pizza-loving days. Hey, thanks for the shout-out. Augie in New Orleans. What do you think, Augie?
Paul, I thought you were going to tell us that somebody else was knocking on the hotel door.
I was hoping. It was only Domino's.
Paul, this Les Miles story gets worse and worse as time goes by. I mean, the things that are coming out today, but to me the most amazing thing is, did you see where the one person who wanted to get rid of Les Miles, it has come out, is Joe Oliva.
Yes,
Joe Oliva, I
think it just shows you the way things work down there. I mean, to Oliva's credit, he wanted to get rid of Miles again in 2015, but everybody said no.
So my whole image of Joe Oliva has changed over time. Because, I mean, he basically put it before the LSU hierarchy. He gave it the Washington Post test. And they chose to save Les Miles and put Les Miles ahead of the whole institution. And that, to me, is unforgivable. One man is not worth the reputation of the whole school. And that's what those people did. They sold LSU out to save Les Miles. Now, at the time they saved Les Miles, it's not like he was Nick Saban. And he was winning national championship after national championship. I mean, he was just okay. But even then, even if he was winning continual national championships, I mean, what would you do? Preserve him and what he did?
Well, herein lies one of the biggest conundrums of college sports. And that the situation that he was in is not unprecedented. It's happened many times, and you know, being the athletic director doesn't mean you always get to pick the coach.
No, but being the school administration, do you sell out your school's integrity?
Augie, I can tell you countless times where it's happened and maybe happening.
Well, it has, and I know this is not necessarily exactly the Penn State situation, but it is another situation where someone in power in a football program, and we're not talking like the president of the United States. This isn't a Marilyn Monroe situation. This is a guy in charge of the LSU football program, and let's put it in perspective and reality in the whole scheme of life. It's not like the fate of the Western world is going to fall if we get rid of Les Miles. And I think this is I'm surprised it happened at LSU, but I guess I shouldn't be. And it's completely disappointing. And my question is, do you think any of this will have any blowback on the current staff and as far as, let's say, Ed Orgeron goes?
Yeah, I think the quick read, the Cliff Notes version read is no, but that could be – what we don't know is what's ahead. And, I mean, this is a comprehensive report, but nobody was compelled outside of LSU personnel to talk and – you know, whether this is not a federal investigation. The federal investigation could be more complex, but I don't see how that would affect anyone on the current staff. We'll take a break. We'll start talking to some of our legendary play-by-play voices when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome you back. Being a broadcaster, it doesn't necessarily equate to being a Supreme Court justice for life. But the University of Florida has had two men in recent history. How about 70 or 80 years, who have served an enormously long period of time. There was a man that served for more than 40. There was an interim, and then along came Mick Hubert, who joins us now. He has been there more than 30 years. First of all, Mick, I can't thank you enough for dropping by today. We thought we would talk about some radio voices, especially the young guys on the block like you. Good afternoon.
Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate being on with you. And you know, I never really thought about the Supreme Court justice, but I know there's just a select company of people who have been here in this position. And, of course, Otis Boggs for 40 years and Red Barber initially for a couple of seasons back in the late 30s. So it's been a very good position for me to be in, not being from Florida, actually growing up in the Chicago area. So, you know, we came in 1989 and we've never left.
I mean, I know that there's a cliche question in here somewhere, like, you know, what's the secret to holding on that long other than, you know, maybe doing memorable calls and having fans gravitate around you? But you've had to deal with a lot of change.
I really have. And, you know, when I got the job, we were in Dayton, Ohio, and that's where I'd worked for 10 years before. So we came down here and not knowing anybody, we embarked on that 89 season. I got to see him at Smith play, and then midway through the year, Galen Hall is fired. And a couple of weeks later, I'm thinking, well, the start of the basketball season is coming, and Norm Sloan is fired, and there's a major investigation going on, and I hear death penalty left, death penalty right. And I remember telling my wife, I said, well, I think we can be okay in baseball, you know, and lo and behold, unfortunately, we had a young man go into surgery in March of that year, 1990, and Denver came out of surgery, lost his life in the hospital. So that was my first year. And I like to say, you know, history intervened because Steve Spurrier got hired around, it was around New Year's Eve of the following year, and then Lon Kruger came in, and all of a sudden we restored justice, so to speak. We started winning championships, and I think that's the answer to your question. When you have good teams and they win games and you're just lucky to be sitting there calling the games, it makes life a lot easier. So I've been very blessed, Paul, to be able to watch national championships in football and basketball and call one in baseball. So it's been great. Where would I go? Why would I want to go anywhere else?
Yeah, Mick, I remember I was in Birmingham at the time, flipping around trying to get the Florida-Kentucky game. I think it was 93, and I heard your call, which became famous. But is it calls like that was the famous Doering touchdown that helped cement your reputation? Because those are, I mean, you had some, you know, many famous calls, but that was the one that stood out in the early part of your career.
Paul, it really does. You know, I grew up, you know, in the Midwest listening to Jack Buck and Harry Carey and Jack Brickhouse and the late Jim Durham called the Bulls games. And so that's what I always wanted to do until I was 7 or 8 years old. And I always tell people, you know, it's not brain surgery. I didn't long to be an astronaut or a physicist or, you know, anything like that. I just want to be a sportscaster. But everybody said, well, you know, if you're going to be a sportscaster, you better have some famous phrase or something. I said, well, I don't know. I don't know how to do this. So, you know, we heard Hey Hey from Jack Brickhouse and Holy Cow from Harry Carey. And then, you know, a buddy of mine, when I went to college, Illinois State, he went out to the West Coast in Los Angeles and started sending me tapes of Dick Enberg called in the Los Angeles Rams games on KMPC radio in Los Angeles. And Dick was using Oh My, and I thought, you know, that could be it for me. I mean, that's it. Now, I have a different inflection on that, and I'm a kind of a radio caller. He was more of a TV guy, so there's a different emphasis on that. But, you know, I got that, and so I embarked on doing games. But as I like to say, you know, the first year I did the games here, we had all that turmoil, and then people always wanted to know, well, where's David Steele? Now, David had gone on and done the Orlando Magic, still does the Magic today. So the second year was, oh, yeah, that's right, we got a new guy. The third year, yeah, Mark Herbert is here. And, you know, the fourth year, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. And then the fifth year, Doering's got a touchdown. All of a sudden, I got on the map after 5 years as the voice of the Gators. But it took a play like that, an improbable play, because, Paul, in that game, I think we still hold the record, the NCAA record, for throwing 7 interceptions in a game and still won the game. So, I mean, Danny Werfel threw, I think, 3, and Terry Dean threw 4. And we won the game on an improbable play to Chris Doering. And so that was the call. And then the next week, again, this was all way back when, you know, back in the day. And Keith Jackson got a hold of that and talked about it on the ABC Game of the Week the following Saturday. And that had that, I guess, was my introduction of something that would go viral long before we ever knew about anything being viral in broadcasting.
talking to Mick Hubert here, the voice of the Gators for more than 30 years. Mick, we as fans love our broadcaster to be for us. Now, you've done a lot in your career, various stops. You've done, you know, obviously major tournaments in the NCAA included. Is there a line that you walk trying not to, and I don't mean this disparagingly toward Larry Munson, who we all love, but, you know, being just, you know, a fanatical screamer versus a professional? How do you walk a line being the voice of the Gators?
I think, number one, you have to just be your own personality. And really, the people who know me would say that Mick's very quiet. I'm a different person. I'm kind of introverted off the air, but when I get that headset on, that microphone, it's a byproduct of listening to the Harry Careys and the Jack Brickhouses and those guys and Jim Durham. And they got excited. They got energized. And, yes, you're rooting for your team, but you also have to give credit to the opponent, because not everything you do is great and everything they achieve is lucky. It's not like that at all. And I've been criticized in the past for sometimes getting too excited for opponent's touchdowns. I'm thinking, wait a minute. If you're tuned in long enough, you'll know that I'm rooting for the Florida Gators. They pay me. But by the same token, I appreciate a good play, and I appreciate homework. I mean, I know a lot of guys that do a nice job on Saturday in football, and they don't do a lot of studying. But I'm thinking, how much better would you be if you would just invest your time in doing all what I like to call the grunt work, do the little grunt work on Monday through Friday, because it's all an investment in you. And then on Saturday, you can kind of be a fan, and therefore you can get involved as a fan and enjoy the game because the work has already been done, and you know where everything is on your charts, and you just kind of call it. But you have to kind of be your own guy. Like I said, you know, I stolen, if you will, Dick Enberg's old mind. I met Dick Enberg, you know, and he signed off on it and was a gracious man to me and everything like that. And so I took that from him, but you can't try and be somebody else. You just have to be yourself. And I grew up listening to those guys that called the Cubs, you know, the Bears, the Bears. And so I always talk about the Gators. I'm not a we, they, us, them guy. I have no problem with people using that. In fact, I've often told people I could use that. And the reason I could use that is because I'm being paid by the Gators. So us is my company, so to speak. But I go by Florida and by the Gators, and yet I leave no doubt as, you know, I'm rooting for our team. But I've also been very blessed all over the years, really, to have a lot of people from other teams, from Seminole fans, from Miami fans, Georgia fans, that say, you know, we don't like the Gators, but we like listening to you. We don't like you winning, but we like listening to you. So I think I took that as a compliment, that people want to have a guy that's knowledgeable and entertaining and enthusiastic, and they hope he's calling their team's games.
Mick, in the remaining moments, is there much difference between when you began doing this, even before the Gators, and now, because everything's on television, everything is so different than it was when you began?
Yes. You know, the thing about it is, when I was back in Dayton, I was doing Division I basketball, the Dayton Flyers, but Division III football, the Dayton Flyers. They were non-scholarship football, so it was small-time football. It was Dayton and Wittenberg and Dayton and Ball Wallace. And back in those days, in the early 80s, I viewed every Dayton-Wittenberg game like it was Ohio State-Michigan. I had that mindset that this is the biggest game there is because I'm doing it. It's today. So that stayed with me all these years that, you know, this is the biggest game. And you have to have that because, like you say, so many people now are watching television. I don't think radio will ever go away. Play-by-play on radio will never go away, but it's certainly not the emphasis it was when I was 8 or 9, 10 years old. And you know, I often made this comment, too, that I'm glad I am my age and not necessarily 35 or 45, because I don't know what the industry is going to be like 20 years from now. We've gone through this pandemic, and, Paul, I haven't traveled to a road game since March 12th last year in Nashville, the SEC tournament. I've done home games in the swamp. I've done basketball games in the O'Connell Center. But everything else, including Sunday's basketball game at Tennessee, I'll do it in the studio. And, you know, I've enjoyed that, and we've handled that with the crowd noise, the ambient sound. It makes it sound like we're there, but it's not the same. And I wonder if that'll be a new pathway in the future, saving money. You can get it done. You don't have to travel, all that. And so I would hate to, you know, I've traveled enough. I've done a lot of traveling. So if I don't travel again, you know, hey, okay, I've had a lifetime of traveling. But for the young guy, he may never get to experience some of the things that I did, because I think the industry is changing, and I think some things were changed out of necessity due to COVID. Other things were changed out of convenience, and they may never go back the way they once were.
What an absolutely delightful conversation this has been with Mick Hubert. I hope you'll come back. There's 1,000 more questions I have, and we'll reschedule when you're not doing one of the million things that you're broadcasting. But Mick, thank you so much for coming by, and all the very, very best.
Paul, thank you. I've enjoyed it anytime. Thank you.
Wow, thank you, Mick. That was incredible. Just to listen to his experiences. We will take a break. Coming back with more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We'll have some other broadcasters on as well. And we're off and running here on a Friday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
We welcome you back. My management of the clock was not too good. I went so long with Mick there that I did not realize that we were kind of blowing right past the segment. At the top of the next hour, we will reset, for those of you just hopping on board, of the big story of the day from LSU. We are going to talk to other broadcasters today. This is something that we've been wanting to do for a while and had a little bit of time today because of the circumstances. We'll talk about talk to Tennessee's play-by-play voice in the next hour, and A&M and Ole Miss is later. And start to include your phone calls as well at 855-242-7285.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.